have a really great privilege now because I get to introduce to you the first woman senator from the state of Wisconsin. You know, really one of the most fun assignments that I had at the Progressive Magazine was last year following Tammy Baldwin's campaign. As she traveled around this state getting ready to take this seat, you may remember the sneering treatment that she got when this, as her opponents like to call her, the most liberal member of Congress from Dane County and a lesbian, the only out lesbian in Congress at the, who took office as a happy and proud out lesbian, that she had the temerity to take on the great and powerful Tommy Thompson. So people thought it wouldn't happen. They said there's no way. She cannot win. And in fact, during the Republican convention last year, I was on a yacht with my friend John Nichols where they were holding a fundraiser for Tommy. Tone deaf as they were, they held this fundraising event on a yacht. And there was a guy standing beside me as they were deriding Tammy Baldwin, and he whispered, "We're going to kick her ass just like Karl Rove said." Well, Karl Rove had a bad year. And progressives in Wisconsin had a fantastic night on election night when we watched those returns roll in downtown at the convention center at Monona Terrace, and we saw Tammy triumphantly beating back Tommy Thompson, the unbeatable Senate candidate. It was really fun to see her beat Tommy. It was really fun to see her beat the conventional wisdom. It was really fun to hear her proud progressivism at the podium. And what was really fun also was to see her opening for Barack Obama at appearance after appearance in Wisconsin as the race was tight here. And then to see the president begin to adopt some of Tammy's talking points on trade, on justice for workers, on wages. He started taking some of Tammy's lines. And I think that really shows you the power of Wisconsin progressivism in Washington, D.C. Seeing Tammy in the U.S. Senate alongside Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren really gives us hope. And I am so happy to welcome to the stage Tammy Baldwin.
Join you here today. And I have been so proud to work alongside so many of you in this room throughout my time in public service. But I have to say that it is with heartfelt thanks that I join you here today as your United States Senator, representing the great state of Wisconsin. And first off, I'd like to ask everyone to join me in thanking Ed Garvey. Thanking Ed Garvey for his leadership in bringing progressives together for fighting Bob Vest since 2002. You know, we joined together to pay tribute to Ed's commitment to advancing our progressive values and giving all of us an opportunity each year to renew our commitment to doing the same. So please join me in another round of applause, thanking Ed and Betty for all their hard work over the years. Now I stand here today first and foremost thank you all for your friendship, your engagement, and for your commitment to fight for the progressive values that we share and that have defined our state. I also come here today to address the struggles of the middle class and the growing divide between rich and poor. And I will do that. But before I do, I must acknowledge a matter that I know is on your minds, as well as the minds of all Wisconsinites, and that is Syria. In Syria, war rages on, and where too many have lost their lives, including more than 1,400 in a chemical weapons attack just over 2 weeks ago. You know that I have always taken matters of war and peace very seriously, and I've always been a strong advocate of exhausting all other measures before going to war or using our military might. And I am proud of my record. I have served in the United States Congress under three presidents, and so far I have opposed a military action undertaken by each of them. Airstrikes in Kosovo under President Clinton, war in Iraq under the Bush administration, and use of military force in Libya during the Obama administration. I was one of the earliest opponents of the war in Iraq. As Congress considered authorization of the Iraq war, I posed a number of specific questions to President Bush, and he failed to answer them. I strongly opposed that war. Authorizing it was a tragic mistake, and we must never make that mistake again. Now, as we consider acting in response to the use of chemical weapons in Syria, I am again asking tough questions of President Obama. And I am demanding clear and substantiated answers. And I am also gaining important insights from others. I traveled to Turkey earlier this year and met with war refugees on the Syrian border. I participated in classified briefings on Capitol Hill and at the White House, and I've heard the voices of thousands of Wisconsinites. The gravity of the issues before us are so significant, and they deserve a full debate. I support having that debate, and I'll be an active participant in it. President Obama's decision to come to Congress on this issue was the right one. We must demand that of all presidents, not just our current president, to come to Congress to get approval before taking military action against another nation. There is reason why so many scholars and analysts have written that there are no good options in Syria. It's because there are no good options. The use of chemical weapons is a global atrocity and demands a global response. The various treaties and conventions addressing these issues have been ratified by most of the world's nations. And therefore, devising what will be a precedent-setting response to their violation demands that the world's nations engage in this discussion. America must not act alone. We must engage a larger, broader international community on this, and thus far I do not believe that that has happened. Now, this wouldn't be fighting Bob Vest if we didn't take a moment to ask WWBD, what would Bob do? So let me read a brief excerpt from Fighting Bob's floor speech on the eve of his vote on our entry into World War I nearly a century ago. He starts with Mr. President, but he's addressing the President of the Senate, not the President of the United States. And he says, I had supposed until recently that it was the duty of senators and representatives in Congress to vote and act according to their convictions on all public matters that came before them for consideration and decision. Quite another doctrine has recently been pronounced by certain newspapers, which unfortunately seems to have the profound, considerable support elsewhere. And that is the doctrine of, quote, standing back of the president, without inquiring the president whether the president is right or wrong. for myself, I have never subscribed to that doctrine and never shall. I shall support the president in measures he proposes when I believe them to be right. And I shall oppose measures proposed by the president when I believe them to be wrong. The fact of the matter which the president submits for his consideration is of the greatest importance, is only additional reason why we should be sure we are right and not be swerved from that conviction or intimidating in its expression in any influence of its power whatsoever. He goes on to say, it is important for us to speak and vote our convictions in matters of internal policy, though we may unfortunately be in disagreement with this president. It is infinitely more important for us to speak and vote our convictions when the question is one of war and peace, certain to involve the lives and fortunes of many of our people, and it may be the destiny of all of them and of the civilized world as well. If, unhappily, on such momentous questions, the most patient research and conscientious consideration we could give them leave us in disagreement with the president, I know of no course to take except to oppose, regretfully, but not less firmly, the demands of the executive. Albeit a century ago, Bob always has some good counsel. Now I want you to know that I have heard your voices. I share your concerns. And this is an issue that deserves deep, deep consideration and thorough review. And I will continue to ask those tough questions. I will continue to press for answers. And I will continue to listen to represent our shared values in Washington. And we have many shared progressive values. Earlier this summer, we celebrated Wisconsin's 165th birthday. And throughout our history, progressives have fought for the same values that bring us together this weekend. Values defined by an understanding that the people of Wisconsin take pride in hard work and believe that we and listen to your concerns. I've seen you visibly express this opinion. In three-part harmony.
Thank you.
celebrated Wisconsin's 165th birthday. And throughout our history, progressives have fought for the same progressive values that bring us together this weekend. Values defined by understanding that the people of Wisconsin take pride in hard work and believe that hard work should be rewarded.
I'm just going to spend about 20 seconds here saying this. I am a Tammy Baldwin Democrat, and I know that she's going to do the best job in Washington that could possibly happen. I am so proud that she's our senator. I am supporting Tammy Baldwin, and I know she's going to do the right thing on Syria.
We understand that the people of Wisconsin hold a deep commitment to community, neighbor helping neighbor. We believe that we're in it together. These are the ideals that we give voice to every day, and this weekend, let's renew our commitment to giving them a voice. I have the honor of occupying the same Senate seat, and in fact, the very same desk in the Senate chamber as Robert M. LaFollette, Sr. And as we all know, Fighting Bob LaFollette ran for this office because he was concerned that while powerful corporate interests were being well served in Wisconsin, in Washington, ordinary people weren't even being heard. He traveled all around Wisconsin, literally speaking from a stage of soapboxes or hay wagons at county fairs, and his message came to define our state's progressive tradition. The things he talked about still ring true today. As I've traveled the state, Wisconsinites have told me that the powerful and well-connected still seem to get to write their own rules, while the concerns and struggles of middle-class families go unnoticed in Washington. Hard-working families feel like our economic system is tilted towards those at the top, that our political system exists to protect those unfair advantages instead of trying to make sure that everybody gets a fair shot. They see Washington as happy to let Wall Street write its own rules, but unable to help college students pull themselves out of debt. They see Washington working to protect big tax breaks for powerful corporations, but unwilling to invest in building the middle class from the bottom up and from the middle out. They see Washington bouncing from one manufactured political crisis and fiscal crisis to the next, but never addressing the real and ongoing crisis of our disappearing middle class. The truth is, while you hear a lot about the wide distance between Democrats and Republicans, the widest and most important distance in our political system is between the content of the debate in Washington and the concerns of working families in places like Baraboo and Beloit and Butternut. That distance parallels the large and growing gaps between rich and poor, between rising costs and stagnant incomes, between our nation and our competitors when it comes to education and innovation, and it's really hurting people. When my grandparents were raising me, they taught me that if you work hard, play by the rules, you can get ahead. The Wisconsinites I talked to grew up learning the same thing. They're working as hard as ever, and they deserve to get ahead. But many are barely getting by. People are still working for that middle class dream, a good job that pays the bills, healthcare coverage you can rely on, a home you can call your own, a chance to save for your kids' college education, and a secure retirement. But instead, too many are finding that even two jobs aren't enough to make ends meet. And those jobs are hard to find and hard to keep. They're finding that the home they worked so hard to own isn't even worth what's left on the mortgage. They're finding that the cost of college is going up, and they're worried that they might never be able to retire comfortably. That's the biggest gap of all. The gap between economic security that Wisconsinites work so hard for and the economic uncertainty that they're asked to settle for. And if we can't close that gap, we might someday talk about the middle class as something we used to have, not something that each generation can aspire to. But when they look across that yawning divide to Washington, they see Republicans playing politics. They see Washington Republicans standing by the same old failed ideas, pushing the same old rejected agenda, relying on the same old obstructionist tactics. They see Washington Republicans obstructing progress on immigration reform and refusing to pass a farm bill and refusing to even go to conference on a budget. They see Washington Republicans vote for the 40th time to repeal the Affordable Care Act and openly rooting for failure instead of working together to make reform work for the American people. They see Washington Republicans threatening to shut down the government unless we strip health care coverage away from millions of Americans who need it. They see Washington Republicans insisting on a Paul Ryan budget that refuses to ask millionaires to do their fair share and ends the guarantee of Medicare as we know it, and that locks in sequestration and makes devastating cuts that will gut investments in economic development, innovation, and education. Now, if this agenda sounds familiar to you, you're not crazy. We did, in fact, just have a whole election about these issues, an election that was supposed to be the definitive referendum to decide our path forward. So we laid out our plans, and they laid out their plans, and then Americans voted. And as you'll recall, the people of Wisconsin rejected Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and Tommy Thompson. But apparently, those Washington Republicans just don't get it. Now, in the wake of their loss last November, Reince Priebus, the RNC chair, decided to conduct an autopsy, an analysis of why they lost the presidency and lost seats in the House and Senate. But even after Reince shared the results of the autopsy with his party faithful, they still don't get it. So here's my analysis. We won. Get over it. And get to work with us to strengthen and grow our middle class. We won because we value fairness. We won because we value hard work and respect labor. We won because we value the promises we make to veterans, to seniors, and to teachers, schools, and students working to build a better future for our state. We won because we advanced the same Wisconsin values that have defined our progressive tradition in this state for well over a century. So it's no wonder they lost the last election. And now, here in Wisconsin, we have a governor more interested in putting his own politics ahead of progress for our great state. A governor who cares more about embracing the Tea Party caucus in Iowa than he does moving our economy forward for the hardworking families of our state. You know, maybe if these guys spent more time learning about the history of our state instead of spending time tearing down the teachers who teach it, you know, maybe they would understand what we all know. Wisconsin is the place where generations of people have worked hard to get ahead. And in the Wisconsin we know, we believe that if you're going to prosper, we're going to do it together. Everyone has to do their fair share, and everyone has to get a fair shot. Everyone deserves a level playing field. Those are the values that I learned growing up in Wisconsin. They're probably no different from the values that you learned growing up here, too. Now, earlier I mentioned that I have the honor of sitting in the very desk that Fighting Bob La Follette once sat in a century ago. I didn't even know you could ask for a specific desk, but you know, senators kind of like school children, they sign their desks or, you know, whittle their name into their desk, and so there's a long history of who's occupied each desk. And I was so pleased to get his desk so that I could be inspired every time I sat on the floor at work. I opened that desk and saw some of the other people who had once sat in the desk. And guess what? Gaylord Nelson also sat in that desk. Now, I mention that because despite the fact that a half century separated their service, there are common themes that guided how they worked, and that is being guided by the voice of the people. I already talked about fighting Bob La Follette, fighting the monopolies of his time to give people of this state a true voice. Gaylord Nelson wanted to see our landscape and our waters and our soils and our air protected. And he talked to his fellow senators and could hardly get them to notice. And then with others, he conceived of the idea of Earth Day, a global teach-in and opportunity to take direct action to improve the environment. And in that first Earth Day, those many years ago, millions of Americans and millions around the globe, in fact, participated and did things in their communities to protect our environment. And when Gaylord Nelson returned to the Senate after that first Earth Day, he kind of got the attention of his fellow senators in a way that he hadn't before. And in fairly short order, important protections began to pass for our environment. The power of engaging the people is something Bob La Follette and Gaylord Nelson knew well. You are here today, and you do the work you do because you want to build a stronger future for yourselves, your families, your communities, this country, and our globe. And now is our chance to do just that. Now you get to decide if the next generation grows up in a Wisconsin that moves these progressive values forward. Now, you get to decide whether we live in a state that lives up to our motto, forward. You get to decide whether 2014 will be like 2010, another midterm election where people stay home and progressives don't show up, or whether we'll prove that we are still willing to fight for our values. And you get to decide, yes, you get to decide whether we protect the gains we have made in passing health care reform or whether special interests repeal it. And you get to decide whether women have the freedom to make their own health care decisions or whether politicians are able to put themselves between women and their doctors. Your engagement means that you get to decide what our future looks like and whether it is defined by progress or not. And in the end, you get to decide whether America and Wisconsin will be governed by corporate special interests that already have too much power in Washington and Madison, or whether we build our future on the values of our middle class, hard work, fair play, caring for our neighbors, and investing in our communities. It's a big job. It's a big job. But I've seen how you've fought for me. And I've seen how powerful we can be together. Together we write that next chapter of Wisconsin's proud and progressive tradition. I thank you for your everlasting involvement and energy and encouragement. Forward. All right.
wonderful is it to have Tammy Baldwin representing us in the United States Senate? When I listened to Tammy talk about the differences between the Republicans and the Democrats, I remember that story that Mo Udall loved to tell about Teddy Roosevelt, who was giving a speech in the town square, and a person up in front kept yelling, "I'm a Democrat, I'm a Democrat." And Teddy Roosevelt said, "Be quiet, you get your chance, you don't have to interrupt my speech." And the guy yelled, "I'm a Democrat, I'm a Democrat." And finally, T.R., getting tired of that, said, "Okay, why are you a Democrat?" He said, "Well, my granddaddy was a Democrat, my daddy was a Democrat, and I'm a Democrat." And he said, "Well," Teddy said to him, "well, if your grandfather had been a jackass, and your father had been a jackass, what would that make you?" And he said, "A Republican." There is a difference.